Welcome to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's live streaming interview series, where leading New Thought teachers, speakers, and authors share the intimate stories behind the 10 best spiritual books that inspired them the most on their spiritual journey. From well-known classics to hidden gems you might never have heard of, the No BS Spiritual Book Club saves you time and money by sharing reliable recommendations from those who've walked the path before you. The No BS Spiritual Book Club, the only No BS guide to the best spiritual books to inspire your own journey of self-discovery. Here's your host, founder of the No BS Spiritual Book Club, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello and welcome. This week's guest, to use her own words, is no prodigy and no guru. Just a geek wannabe with a background in fine arts and multiple certifications in those oddball alternative healing modalities you'd only find in California. A writer, imaginator, self-confessed troublemaking misfit and explorer, Wynne Taylor is also a very clever wordsmith with a prodigious gift for creating enticing marketing campaigns and highly imaginative metaphysical sci-fi novels. Wynne Taylor joins me now to share the books that have made the biggest impact thus far on her life journey. Wynne Taylor, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Now, you say that you're pretty certain you didn't crack a book before the age of 25. How did you manage to avoid them for so long?
Oh, you know, it takes it's a talent. It's funny because I even remember thinking I'm not sure I should have gotten out of high school. I just am pretty sure they wanted to get rid of me because I was enough of a troublemaker. But the bar was set pretty low as far as academic standards at that point. So
what happened to change it?
I guess that really starts around book three. So I can launch into the first book or I can...
No, don't tell us yet. But okay. So, I mean, what made you even pick up that first book that changed things?
Well, the first book was Ferdinand the Bull. If you're ready to jump into that bit. So that was... Yeah,
what attracted you to that book?
That was a book that I read as a kid. It just stuck with me. So it wasn't a book that I picked up as an adult. It was a book that had an impact on me as a child, and I kept it with me as an adult all throughout my journey. Yeah. Okay. That book stayed with me.
Okay. Well, before we get into that book, there's something else I want to say, and you've said this yourself. Your journey through literature was fueled by an unyielding sense that you don't belong here on earth. Or among humans. So that must have impacted the kind of books that you were drawn to.
Absolutely. Yeah. The very first book that I remember picking up as an adult is the second book. Mm. But as far as diving into books and literature and becoming an avid reader, really did not happen until that third book came along. Okay. And so it's really... It's very sequential as far as how that happened. Yeah.
So we're going to go through your books in a sequential manner.
Yeah. I mean, it's really how I approached the list as well. I mean, once the first book came to mind, I even questioned, do I include this book? I can't go on Sandy Sedgebeer's show and have that be my number one book. That's ridiculous. And I thought, I got to lean into it. It's who I am and we're going for it. And then I just followed, as a writer does, I followed myself as a character, and they took me on to the next book and the next book. So,
well, you'd be surprised. Quite a few people do go back to some of those childhood books.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole point of it is if it made an impact on you, then it needs to be on your list.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about that first book, which is a childhood classic that not only sparked international controversy, but also became a Disney movie. Yeah. The Story of Ferdinand by Munro Leaf, published in 1936. What did you love about this book?
It's funny because when the first it was the first book came to my mind when I started to write this. I'm like, Ferdinand. And I didn't know the history of the book until I started to dig in when I'm making this list. Apparently other people found it profound as well. But as a kid, you know, supposedly it's supposed to, you know, speak to, you know, being true to yourself or, you know, embracing who you are. And for me, it was really something, you know, it was Ferdinand. He just was peaceful. He was harmony. He couldn't be anything else, you know, and it was just his natural state of being, and something that's what resonated for me even as a kid. And I mean, I probably obviously didn't put it in those words, but there was a stillness. Yeah. But, you know, it has quite an interesting history.
A lot. Yes, absolutely. I mean, it was banned at one point, and I think it was sometime around the Spanish War. Many people felt that it was, you know, a disguised attack or something. Apparently it even faced condemnation from Hitler.
Yeah, he burned it.
Then Walt Disney came along and turned it into a movie.
And you know what's funny is I did not even know that it had been turned into a movie. I mean, I because I don't generally watch TV, so the ads that come up. And
it was 1938, movie.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I just knew about the book. Yeah. Well, I knew it was remade into a movie, but.
So, you know, he is a bull, and he's not doing what traditional bulls do. He doesn't want to get in that ring and joust with the, you know, some of the people that he's going to find there with pointy sticks.
Yeah.
He just wants to be himself and
smell the roses. Right.
So, did this help you to feel more at home in yourself?
It planted a seed. It planted a seed of a trajectory. Something I wanted to achieve on an unconscious level. I certainly wouldn't have recognized that as a child or even as a young adult or even going into early adulthood. But it definitely probably set a course. It planted a seed for me.
So book number two, Healing with Color and Light.
Yeah.
Improve Your Mental, Physical and Spiritual Health by Theo Gimbel, published in 1994. When and how did this book come into your life?
So this would be if we were talking about a play, this would be act two, where the next book comes in. I had left Charlotte, where I grew up, in Charlotte, North Carolina, and went to Martha's Vineyard for the summer. And that was the first time I was introduced to sort of a bohemian culture. It wasn't like overt, but it was enough of a thread of a bohemian culture there where they had crystal shops and, you know, healers and all of these things. And it's like a vortex apparently on Martha's Vineyard of energy. And so it was after my first summer there, I had been introduced to this. I hadn't really dug into it, but I'd gone to Boston for the winter and I was running along the Charles River. And that's when it occurred. You know, really, it's such a vibrant memory for me to be standing at the Charles River and looking out and just really feeling like I was outside of something. And at that point, I was like, okay, I've got to do something about this. And I wasn't going to go talk to a person about, you know, I'm not a person that would generally, that as a child or an adult, that wouldn't have been my first thing is to go talk to somebody like a therapist. So when I went back to Martha's Vineyard the next summer, I went back to those little alternative shops and just started looking around. And this is the book that jumped out at me. I don't know what it was about this, but I picked it up and decided to dig in and just introduced to the idea that we are more than like these physical beings. And it gave me something. It was a whiff of something to follow, you know, to think outside bigger than just the skin. Mm-hmm. And I even went as far as creating my own little healing light room with that. My closet. I turned my closet into like a healing light space, and I had colored light bulbs, and I probably had some kind of like metaphysical music going on, and you know, the results were, there were no results from that, but you know, I knew that it was something I wanted to explore more. Yeah. Mm.
Book number three, according to a joint survey conducted by the Library of Congress and the Book of the Month Club, this next book is the second most influential book for Americans today after the Bible. And it is Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, published in 1957, the second most influential book for Americans.
Wow. All right, I've got something impressive on my list. Here we go.
So what did you get from this book?
So this book, a boyfriend handed this to me before I left the States. I went on backpacking, and it was my, I probably wouldn't have read it if I hadn't been snowed in on the Himalaya Mountains, honestly. But once I did, I just dug into it, and it introduced me to the love of reading, for one. And really, for the first time, I started to contemplate like ideas, not just sort of my own being or how it felt to be here, separate from it, but really like contemplate some bigger ideas. And that really is what it created for me.
How old were you?
I was around 24 at this point, maybe 20, somewhere between 24 and 25. And I had really, when he handed it to me, I really didn't have any intention of reading it, but I put it in my backpack, and I always laugh. I was like thinking, I'm pretty sure he was telling me to level up, crack a book. But it found its way to me. And after that, I read everything I could find of hers, just, you know, everything other than John Galt's speech. Pretty sure I skipped over that.
So what do you think that you've taken from the books other than contemplating, thinking?
Well, for me, that was key for me. For me, it wasn't necessarily that I had started to learn anything specific up to this point. It was learning to think. That's what I was getting at to this point. More than just, you know, accepting information or accepting the way that things are based on what somebody else tells you reality is, but has you question the nature of things and the information that you're given. And in fact, all of my books, that is the underlying current, is it? They really all put me deeper in the seat of my own stewardship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, book number four is a book that you say made you feel out of your depth from page one. It is Hands of Light, A Guide to Healing Through the Human Energy Field by Barbara Brennan, which is an incredible book. Yeah. This was published in 1987. And I think her passing last year was a huge loss to the world.
Yeah. Yeah. This book, it found its way to me. I had just gotten back from that journey through Asia, and I'm sure that something about India, you know, seeped into my skin. And when I was back on Martha's Vineyard, where it apparently happens to be my landing spot for everything, I went looking for something more to cultivate what I had started to develop after I left the country, like starting to get a little bit more in your own skin outside of the world that knows you. And so just going through the shops and picked up that book, and I was definitely out of my depth. It was everything I hadn't like thought of before, like a channel, like what's a channeler, you know, or I'm a vibration, you know, I'm energy. I'm an energy field that's interacting with other energy fields. And, you know, so it was all new. And they were concepts that definitely took a while to even kind of start to wrap my head around, but you know, it definitely led me down the path of like going into sort of healing modalities and that kind of thing to really understand it.
You say that you got certified in vibrational healing and geeked out on sound healing.
Yeah. By the time I made it later in the journey to California, I got certified in a modality called vibrational, which is kind of a version of Reiki, and started taking sound healing classes there and to learn about that. It's my brain works better when it's something that I can use and apply.
Yeah. So by that point, you were really getting into natural therapies.
Yeah. The whole new age thing. Absolutely. It was starting to really sort of like be part of who I was and sort of what would start to, you know, dictate some of my steps. You know, what I would start to look for.
Did you find that pursuing that helped you to feel more as though you belonged, or it didn't matter that you didn't belong?
Probably a little of both. I think starting to be introduced to those concepts and definitely doing the healing work gets you into your skin. Do you know, I think that it's interesting when I hear a lot of people in the new age and they're going to these other realms outside of their body. And my journey has been get in your body, you know, it's been like the total opposite. Mm-hmm. And so for me, really, that was the step one. You just got to get in your skin first and everything, you know, anything else after that has to start there. At least for me, had to start there. And I think that's what it's helped me cultivate.
Yeah. So book number 5 is one that regularly tops people's lists. And in fact, I think it is in the top 10 of the 10 best lists, you know, the one that is recommended, the 10 that are recommended the most. And this one is always right up the top. Jonathan Livingston's Seagull by Richard Bach.
Yeah. It's hard to pick a favorite of Richard Bach's, but how you can't resist a seagull. Yeah. A seagull with big dreams.
Yes. Yeah. 1970. It's hard to believe. I mean, the story of, you know, the book was published and he went off walkabout or doing something. And obviously, you know, long before phones and even faxes, I imagine, he didn't even know that it was becoming such a big seller. I mean, can you imagine that?
No, I can't. But I can see, obviously everyone can see why. Yeah. That book
touched something, didn't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's part of the human experience, you know, something that sort of was, you know, here's this seagull that is, you know, face a sort of condemnation just for doing what it is that is who he is and has to like push against that and then comes back around with compassion, you know, and it's just a lovely story.
It is a lovely story. Yeah. Book number 6 is The Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu, written somewhere around 400 BC. If you can get your head around that, tell us about this book.
So there's his writing. It seems so simple in so many ways, but it is so layered. I mean, the messages seem so steeped in a lifetime of like contemplation, and you could almost just like grow with it. Everywhere you grow, it's already past that, but it still has something to offer you in these simple messages of just being, just mastering yourself and mastering being here in the flow with things exactly the way they are, exactly the way they aren't. And just it just looks to put you in a position of just really appreciating what this is, absent of the meaning that gets placed on it. It for me, it really felt like just the art of being.
Was that a revelation to you?
Yeah, you know, and it's something that I still strive for in every moment. When I, you know, it is something I always reach for. But yeah, I mean, it's. I remember one of his particular where it has a farmer whose horse runs off, and then all these series of things happen that he just doesn't react to. I'm not going to go into the story because I know it'll take too long. But it's just it's sort of those things. Just learning how to just. Let things be as they are, and they aren't. And there's a deep appreciation, just to get it to the deep appreciation of being.
Yeah, you said that you're moved and stilled by every word he's laid down. Is stillness something that is challenging for you, or was challenging?
Oh, it was for sure. Yeah, yeah. I think. I mean, it's hard to be still when you're not in your skin.
Yeah.
I mean, it's. It's just, it's not. And for me, like, even now I notice if I start to, you know, feel off, it's like, stop, just
yeah,
be here.
Do you know. Go back to the book often?
Yeah, we have it downstairs. It's been probably a couple months or so, but it's one of those books where you have, yeah. And you can just sit and just pick open and have like a little phrase, mm-hmm. And then take that with you. But it is. It's one of those books that's so it's so inspirational. Just a little piece of nugget to take with you. Mm. Yeah.
So book number 7, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? Better known as its retrospective title, which was Blade Runner by Philip Dick, published in 1968.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this book... It's sort of represents, you know, my introduction to science fiction, which for so many reasons, I love science fiction. Its ability to really put you outside of the box, way outside of the box. And it doesn't, it's not really handing you the information. It's putting you in the seat of coming up with your own conclusions and how you feel about something. And, you know, for me, Philip K. Dick and other science fiction writers, it stimulated something in me that I hadn't even considered before. It introduced me to a piece of myself, which was sort of a nerd, you know, like I didn't pay attention in school. So it didn't occur to me that I would want to use my brain this way, you know, with technology and futurist ideas. But, you know, for me, this book coupled with, you know, the futurist platform, you know, where it really asks, like, who gets to decide what's legitimate and what are those parameters? Like, anything that we would claim was, you would use to decide what was human and what wasn't human. There's plenty of humanity that doesn't fit within that mold. So you kind of have to throw that out the door a little bit and ask, like, really, what is it to be? Like, what is a legitimate reflection of source? And for me, if it exists, isn't it part of source? How is it not legitimate? So yeah. it really had me question a lot of this.
So was this the first science fiction book that you read?
It's the first one that I remember. Yeah. So this is- there may have been other ones. I mean, there would have been, some of the softer science fiction, the ones that have a lot more humor. But this would be the first one that was really probably like a little hardcore, I guess, a little bit, like in the concepts that it tackled.
This triggered ignited the imaginator in you.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Because it also, it brings in sort of the some of the things that I'd already been, you know, looking at anyway, which was the nature of beingness. And so you take that and you put it into a science fiction world, and it sort of married these two worlds and started to create what would then be what the things that I would want to write about that married spirituality and science and the questions of like morality or any of those things, you know, it sort of marries those two.
Did you become a big fan of his?
I think a big fan of science fiction altogether.
Right. Not necessarily, you know, of him as an author.
Yeah, not necessarily just his work, but yeah, science fiction in general.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to take a short break now. You're listening to a No BS Spiritual Book Club interview and sharing the 10 books that had the biggest influence on her life journey is Gifted Wordsmith, author of highly imaginative metaphysical sci-fi novels, creator of scintillating marketing campaigns, and self-confessed troublemaking misfit. I love that phrase. Wynne Taylor. We'll be back with more of Wynne Taylor's 10 best books after the break. Stay tuned.
Om Times TV.
Maya Angelou once said that there is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and when I'm not hosting Om Times Media's flagship radio show, What Is Going On, and the No BS Spiritual Book Club, I help people share their untold stories. Books are my life, my joy, and my passion, and there is no greater reward than helping aspiring writers get their books out of their heads and into the hands of those who are waiting to read them. If you feel that you have a book in you, but don't know where to begin, visit sedgbeer.com. Click on the Work With Me tab and find out how my experience helping others tell their stories might be just what you've been looking for. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com.
Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself. Invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust, spheric approach. Om Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, Om Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an Om Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on Om Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive Om Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. Om Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's one in five daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
Welcome back. Wynne Taylor, book number 8, Quite Different, Becoming Supernatural by Dr. Joe Dispenza, published in 2017.
Yeah, I'm a big Joe Dispenza fan. I think I really had started to listen to, I first introduced to him or his work with Joe Dispenza and Greg Braden and Bruce Lipton. And so when my husband and I were working on the renovations to our house before we were getting ready to move cross country to the, back to the East, you know, I listened to this book over and over again, just trying to like get the concepts to burn into my wiring about, you know, just the power of the mind really to overcome its programming and the importance, like how much it controls of your trajectory. And then also just the relationship between the heart and the brain.
Have you been to any of his seminars?
No. It's kind of on my bucket list, but yeah, I think his ability to to bring the science into it and the measurement and the tools and really sort of put a structure around it was something that really resonated. It really resonated with me.
Yeah, that's so necessary today. I think, yeah. You know, everybody is fed up with some, you know, all these claims and slick, books even, you know, there's a lot of them about. And yeah. Anyone who can bring some science to that and really ground it and offer some evidence, I think is doing us all a great service.
Yeah. That's definitely something that's one of the reasons why I listened to it so many times is just really, it's just, you can wrap your head around it when he starts to put numbers to things and break things down to a particle level or, you know, any of the science that gets put into it. But, and it's just like one of the things that really stuck with me about that book is that emotions are addictive. You know, you don't know what comes first, the emotion or the thought.
Yeah.
And one can trigger the other one. And so it really has to be present with, wait, did something really happen? Or is it my body addicted to something and now it's producing something and now I'm just now off on it? It's really, really wild.
Yeah. Think before we feel or feel before we think.
For sure.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So another quite different one, we seem to be quite eclectic here in this list, is Magicians of the Gods, the Forgotten Wisdom of Earth's Lost Civilization. Graham Hancock, 2015.
Oh, I love him so much. I love Graham Hancock. Like Joe Dispenza, I was, you know, introduced to his work, you know, well before I got my hands on this book. I mean, this thing is like this big. That is not a book I'm going to go pick up normally, but I got it on audio. So, but, learning how to think, learning how to contemplate, learning how to question. And he's another one that sort of brings research and science into his discoveries. And it really was like a light bulb moment, like on all levels, question the reality of things or the information that you're given or their history. Like when you start going into like Göbekli Tepe or how the pyramids could possibly function or the erosion of the Sphinx, like what really is our history here, you know? Yeah. And he delivers it. He delivers his work in such a fluid way. It just makes it so much easier to absorb.
Yeah. Did you watch his series, Ancient Apocalypse?
Yeah.
It's interesting how that really touched some people's nerves. He really got slammed by a lot of publications over that, which makes you smile because you think, you know, there's a lot of evidence here and he's raising so many questions. Why would somebody just, you know, call it pseudoscience?
Yeah, absolutely. Keep, you know, pat it down. Like a lot of them, you have this bring up things like homeopathic medicine. I know that you had a guest that was speak about that and how they were using that for mental health. And it's just so interesting.
Things that get buried.
Yeah. And like, color therapy, going back to the book too, like that was something that, you know, 1000 CE, like in the Middle East, it was part of the way that they, you know, he worked with people.
We certainly live in an interesting time, and I really applaud the fact that we have all of these, you know, great people who are uncovering the science, you know, as well as some of the phenomena. Okay, so book number 10, it's not really a book, it's a series of books, and it's not one that I've ever come across before. So you can educate me here. Certainly book one in the series was a nominee for Best Science Fiction 2021. And it is the Monk and Robot book series by Becky Chambers. Tell me about this series of books.
Yeah, so it's a two-book series. I don't know if she's going to at some point add anything else to it. But, you know, this it is a wide swing from Philip K. Dick's book. You know, the premise of it starts where this teen monk Dex is lives in basically a the perfect world. Doesn't need anything. No one does, and yet he has a sense of something's missing. You know, that thing that always launches the hero on the journey. And this teen monk has, you know, decided that he's going to venture outside of this haven, outside of the village, and go looking for it. And his goal is these frogs that he's only heard recordings of, but he wants to go find them. He's on this next path to see if he can figure out what's missing. And meanwhile, the robots are sentient at this point. They live somewhere else on another part of this planet. And as Dex is sort of venturing out onto his road, onto his journey, up shows the robot. And the robot is there to find out what do humans need. And so the quest kind of goes from there. And so you really, the beauty of this book is, it kind of reminded me, the first thing I thought of was, you know, like Ram Dass or, you know, someone like that was like had everything as Albert, you know, and so that desire to figure out what was missing, like had him give up everything to look for it. And this monk's journey is just as messy, you know, as like that human experience, that spiritual warrior's journey. But so anyway, this story just sort of takes you through this relationship between the robot and the monk. And the robot ends up really harnessing some of the aspects of elevated humanity that Dex is actually aspiring to, like of just a beingness with things, a sort of a quietness, or you know, they would go just watch like a seed grow from, you know, seedling to a tree, and that would be their life. That's what they wanted to do. And there's nothing that you have to be, nothing that you have to do. It is a pure realization of the beauty of just being.
Did he find what was missing?
I'm not going to tell you.
You're not going to tell me. Okay. I like the way you ended your description on your dedicated page on the website. You said that the series asks, in a world where people have what they want, does having more matter?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And that is something everybody should contemplate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. Well, that's your 10 best list. Now, let's talk a little bit about you. Out of all of the authors of these books, which one would you most like to have dinner with?
Oh, wow. You know, I kind of probably go with Joe.
Okay.
Yeah, I just think for one, that would be a very interesting conversation. Or wait, maybe it'd be Graham. One of the two, it's hard to say. But I'd want to pick their brains.
Or maybe have them both at dinner.
Yeah, thank you. I can have two.
That would be an interesting one. Although
I just want to watch them talk.
They're too much in agreement, I think. You know? Yeah. So they'd just be saying the same thing back and forth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. So you've written two metaphysical sci-fi novels, The New World Chronicles, Rise of the Protector and Dawn of the Watchers, and they've been described as witty banter, quirky characters, and a teenage kick-ass heroine with heart and humor in a fast-paced galaxy crossing cyberpunk tale. That is quite a recommendation. Tell me about these books. How did you conceive the stories, and is the heroine you?
You know, I think probably like any writer, that they're all a little bit of you, you know? I loved, Jinx was the first character that actually came to me for this. She revealed herself pretty easily, because she's still like my journey of learning, you know, who she is, and probably pushing against a lot of like the world that she grew up in. So it is definitely the hero's journey for her. But it really, the idea for the story came, it was around like 2014. I ran across an article, and I only stopped because it was this billionaire Russian named Dmitry Itzkov that was shaking the hands with the Dalai Lama. And the Dalai Lama was signing off on this initiative. He called it, I don't remember what the name of it was, but it was a 2045 initiative for basically humanity to utilize simulated reality for the purpose of speeding up evolution, spiritual evolution. And when I saw that, I thought, oh, interesting. Like they're going to be sort of like Matrix in a pod where their bodies are there, but it really was more downloading your consciousness, however that would happen. But the idea for that, I thought, wow, what if we did go into a virtual world, had our bodies in a pod, and then the environment was designed to help you reach higher levels of enlightenment and discoveries that you wouldn't get necessarily with all the other things going on? What would that look like? Or what would that be? Then I thought of what if something goes wrong? You know, what if something went wrong with that? And that was the story. But I think I just lost my train of thought. I went spiraling.
What is it that you want people to take from these books?
So for me, there are a few different threads that I have throughout this book. One is that the rise of like the EMFs and technology and sort of the impact that can have on our organic structure. Like it's the interference, which I know is like a thing that people are starting to at least be aware of, that there are like impacts to how we, our physical health and our mental health with the interference of all of the electronics and the 5G and all of these things that can interfere. So that this was part of it. This is part of what is one of the undercurrents of the stories, but it is also starts to pack in some of the things that I've looked at on my own, like the nature of being a vibrational being and the impact that you can have by harnessing that, and that it's impact outside of yourself, that it impacts those around you. And really, Jinx is your reluctant hero. She's the one that goes on the journey that most of us go on, that it's like pushing against these things, and her only goal is to protect her friend, who is the one that embodies all of these qualities of the healer, and the one that can, you know, shift, take organic life from the brink of doom.
So here's something. This makes me think about, you know, you've trained in vibrational healing. We tend to, when we're meeting people, engaging with people, you know, a lot of what is going on between us is not said, and it's sometimes not even acknowledged as being felt, but it is coming in on a frequency.
Yeah.
What happens with, say, a robot that has no frequency? How do we interact with them?
Yeah.
Have you thought about that?
Mm-mm.
I mean, it's an interesting thing to think about, because
it is for sure. But you have to. But also wonder, well, if the nature of reality is particle or wave, like if they're the very structure of their being is something that vibrates, or else it wouldn't be held in place. There must be at least the potential for something there. Like there is an intelligence in the very structure of its beingness. Like, why would it not have the capacity, like the nature of the material that creates it is not.
Well, it's been created by a human. So it must have something.
It must have something, and there's something holding it in place. There's an intelligence holding these pieces together.
And is that any different than how we were created?
Exactly. And we're kind of machines reprogramming ourselves.
Yeah.
And we don't even know if we're living in a virtual world, according to a lot of the, you know, or is reality even, we just make it up as we go, like particle wave. You're perceiving this and now that's the reality. And there's just infinite potentials that you could walk into in any moment based on what you're perceiving and how you're vibrating. Yeah, exactly. It's just reacting to you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, every time we make a choice, we're collapsing so many possibilities. Mm. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's happening every second, every single second, every move we make, every thought we have. You know, we are collapsing all of these other possibilities. I mean, it is an interesting one. I'm interested in AI. I'm interested in where it crosses with us. Where's the meeting place for us? You know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, a robot, the guy, the tea monk, learned from the things from the robot. There's a stillness in the robot. The robot doesn't carry some of the things that we carry, not necessarily, you know, to our benefit, often to our detriment. So you can see that you could get a lot out of that. You could learn a lot from that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's one of the beauties of that series.
Yeah.
You know, or books like that, where it's
Do you address this in your series?
I will be. That's kind of coming into the third one. There's a building up of like foundation, because A, I'm still learning and questioning things, and B, I hope that readers that are sort of whether these concepts and new age concepts are new or not, that it invites them in at a level that with a character that's slowly trying them on as well, you know, and then let it peel back from there.
What sort of response are you getting?
The first one I got a great response. The second one I'm still working on the marketing. I got kind of which, you know, it's like, you know, marketing's key. Yeah. But when we moved cross country, we had some obviously famous stuff that we were doing to get here and renovating the home. So but I've got great reviews. Editorial reviews are awesome. It's a matter of getting it in people's hands is the next step.
Yeah. Yeah. You said in your description about yourself that you're a geek wannabe. Yeah. What is it you wanna be?
It's more a lot of these, my husband is like a very smart guy who's, you know, a programmer, and his ability, like, this is a geek to me, like the ability to listen to information that's really dense in technology or any kind of concepts and absorb it and then even regurgitate it and understand it. It takes me a long time I have to take little small bites at a time and apply it. And for me, I always say geeks and nerds lovingly, because I love a big brain, and me being able to like play with some of these concepts. I geek out on it. Like anything having to do with.
So do you get inspiration from him for your books?
We love the same thing. So it's but he definitely, one of my characters, I leverage his personality definitely for one of the male characters, for sure. Yeah. There's always like a calm, like nature, you know? Yeah. Mm. So a good geek is nice and methodical and
What drives you?
In life in general, or two things, I guess. A, being creative, that drives me. Just being creative. And the next is just learning on a deeper and deeper level, stillness.
You have, and I've experienced this, so I know that of which I speak. You have a way with words. Is this something that you've always played with, or something that you've realized as you've grown older?
Yeah, It happened when I got older. Martha's Vineyard once again. Seems I was on Martha's Vineyard, and there's a piece of furniture by the side of the road. And I was like, oh, I'm going to turn that into an animal for one. So I started making all these creatures out of secondhand furniture. But I always felt like, God, I feel so bad. Like, how would it feel to just be tossed out on the side of the road? Like, you had this life and you performed your function and then somebody just put you out. Or you get to the dump or you get to. And so for me, I was like, well, it has to be a little heartbreaking. And so I created this world where they had the opportunity to evolve past their physical state into some whatever they wanted to be. It was called the Mystic Junkyard. And they would go talk to Ganesh, the elephant sage armchair. And so kind of evolve from there. And so that really, just working on that, those stories came to me. And that's really what inspired me to start writing, is it just wanting to tell their story. And from there, I just kind of kept going.
But you have a way with words that I've not necessarily experienced. I mean, the way that, you know, and I pay a lot of attention to words, the way that you create descriptions, the things, you know, I'm interested in the way your mind is working. Where is it pulling, you know, these descriptions? What is it seeing to be able to describe things that way?
Where does it come from? I don't even know. You just start throwing words down on a paper, and it's just the love of moving the words around or coming up with like a quirky way to put it that encapsulates it, that has a life to it.
Easily? Hmm? Or do you think about it? Does it really come easily, or do you play with it and think about it and, you know,
A little of both. It kind of depends. Like, it can come, yeah. I think that it's over time, it's started to come a lot faster. Like, if I think of something, I can pretty much come up with a, you know, I can write something pretty quickly. But to go in and fine tune it and really get the perfect word, I mean, that takes more time. But a blank sheet of paper is not daunting for me, I guess.
But none of the books on your list are what I would call particularly, you know, I mean, they're all fairly straightforward. None of them are so quirky in the structure.
Yeah.
Is there somebody that you admire?
Oh, I love the quirkiness of like Tom Robbins, or, you know, that kind of, that was definitely, it would be like an influential book is sort of what I would gravitate towards, where it's just off the wall kind of writing. And even some of the young adult, you know, books that just have a high imagination. I mean, obviously everybody loves Harry Potter, but, you know, there's some others that sort of really combine like wit and pacing and that have been influential and kind of quirky and yeah.
Mm. What about poetry? Do you, like poetry?
There's not many that I have dug into, but like Rumi. Obviously, I think most people that love Rumi would love poetry. That's one that I often go if I want inspiration for something that's kind of love, mystical, heartwarming. Sometimes I just go look up his quotes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So you came to books reasonably late, and these books helped you to really move into your complete self, learn much more about you and about the world, etc. What book would you recommend to somebody who was just starting out along this path to really help them open up to all the possibilities?
Oh, wow, that's a big question. You know, I keep going back to Joe, but it's one of the easiest places to start. Because he can speak to, you know, anybody at any level that they are really. that would be somebody that would be one that I would say is a great place to start, just to be introduced to the concepts. And they're practical, you know, I mean, you can use them, you can apply them, you know, just bringing awareness to your thoughts, or just how you, you know, just trying to imagine like what your energy is, like becoming aware of like how it's feeling inside your body. You know, it's just, you can know pretty quickly if something's like off, you know, if you're not centered. Either that or my cat will tell me.
Well, what are you reading now?
What, you know, I'm like looking over here. I just picked up a book that somebody gave me. I would walk away and go get it, but it's called, you know, it's a young adult novel called like Angels. It's a young adult, and I'm not even sure who the author is.
Oh, it's fiction.
Just got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just got a fiction book. Yeah.
So what attracted you to this?
Somebody just, actually my mother-in-law handed it to me. Cause she was reading it. She's like, well, this isn't quite it's too fantasy. So, you know, maybe you read it, but she was attracted to it because it said angels on it. And I'm like, that sounds like something I'm in for, angels. But it's basically, the premise of it is teens they are angels, and they're starting to learn that they're angels, and they have all these powers to obviously help save the world.
Yeah. Very popular, I'm sure. We're out of time now, I'm afraid. I just want to say one thing before we close, and that is, as such a great wordsmith, if anybody is interested in putting your talents to work for them, are you open to approaches?
Always. And you can be found at wynntaylor.com.
Good.
And keep an eye out. I'm actually having my books narrated right now, so that'll be available.
Good. Okay, Wynn, thank you so much for sharing your 10 best list of spiritual books with the No BS Spiritual Book Club's Library of Recommendations. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for entertaining, you know, bringing me on. That was very generous.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Fun. So you can learn more about Wynn Taylor's books and her unique talents at her website, wynntaylor.com. This show is also available as a free downloadable podcast on the Omtimes website and on Spotify, iHeartRadio, all the major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Amazon, and Audible, if you like to listen rather than view. That's it for this week. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. I'll be back at the same time next week with another 10 best interview for the No BS Spiritual Book Club. Till then, it's goodbye from me, and thank you again to Wynn Taylor.
Thank you.